look, we don't know what a generation of people look like that do all the right things. I mean, it could be a very, very different landscape when people grow up with the right diet, with the right exercise, and the right signal molecules. I think the take-home message for you and the public and everybody listening is that at any age, you can benefit. And every day makes a difference. Some of the things that we do are probably a one-way street. Some of the things we can do can reverse certain aspects.
The Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Actual Outdoors. They help build beautiful brands that highlight the approachable and authentic parts of outdoor recreation. Said simply, they keep it real. Learn more at actualoutdoors.com.
This is a Life in Motion audio experience, a podcast about travel, action sports, culture, and more.
What's up, and welcome to episode 153 of Life in Motion. I've got Dr. Carl Giordano with me, who is an orthopedics and spine surgeon. He's also tackling the question we all have: how do we slow or even reverse aging? As lovers of the outdoors, I think we'd all like to know that answer. I'm excited to hear his story and how he's helping us enjoy what we love for longer. Dr. Carl, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. I look forward to being on this show.
Yes, I'm excited. You know, we've had lots of guests that participate in outdoor activities and obviously have a love and affinity for the outdoors, but not too many that know the science kind of behind it and how to do those things longer. So I'm excited to dive into that conversation. But before we do, let's start with kind of, you know, I guess your origin story, you know, kind of where you grew up, what kind of hobbies you had, what kind of led you down this path in the first place?
Sure. Well, look, my present lifestyle is very active. I play a lot of sports, work out a lot, play fairly competitive squash, hit golf balls almost every day. So for me, talking about this field of outdoor activities and strength training and how it dovetails into longevity and health span is something I love talking about. And look, my background is that, you know, I'm a practicing orthopedic spine surgeon. But as any doctor, like, your academic path takes you to medical school. And for me, after medical school or during medical school, I also spent some time at the NIH. I also spent some time at Rockefeller University. And, you know, now I'm working as an orthopedic spine surgeon. And look, the medical practice, it kind of gives you a platform to interact with all walks of life. And it's another academic opportunity to see how all of the information you've gathered over the years kind of interacts with, you know, the real population. So I got interested in lifespan and health span probably maybe specifically a decade ago. But orthopedics is like life in motion. You can't be an orthopedic surgeon and not love sports and activities and dovetail into health span and lifespan, because it's basically one and the same. So I've been participating in the discussion largely because I'm trying to create more traction so that this information that we're going to talk about today gets dispersed out into the public. And I think a lot of this is almost dead to the public because of its inherent complexities and intricacies. And I think if people understand it, it becomes very compelling. And so, you know, my goal is partly to explain in a way that people will understand how all of these things interact and how, you know, essentially every day makes a difference. So there's a lot of people out there in this field, and I think it's great. I think the more, the better. And I think the more people hear about this information from multiple sources, the more it may sink into them. So that's kind of, you know, where I'm at and my love for this field.
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess that does make sense, you know, having a love for kind of different activities, you know, working within orthopedics. You know, myself, I grew up riding BMX bikes. That was kind of my outdoor activity. Luckily, I haven't had too many broken bones, some small things, but I've been to the doctor plenty of times. So I'm sure you've seen some interesting patients.
Yeah, I definitely have.
So
I spent some time in Seattle at Harborview Medical Center, which is the largest trauma center in the country. And when I was there, there was a big BXM biking event, and there were quite a few nasty injuries.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know those ones from the big events, they were much higher skill level than myself, but I still had fun and still do it with my kids, so it's good. But so you mentioned kind of, you know, this is sort of this quote topic of longevity, you know, kind of is multifaceted. There's different categories within that, and like you said, the public doesn't necessarily understand all of them or how they're all kind of intertwined to, you know, create kind of that outcome that you're looking for. So maybe that's a good place, you know, we can kind of cover those different categories and then how they kind of, you know, work together and flow into each other, you know, obviously to reach that ultimate goal.
Sure. I think, you know, we can speak more specifically about the exercise category today, but I think that the trinity, the triad, these three categories that people need to kind of keep in the back of their mind is that, you know, exercise, diet, and certain signal molecules are basically where the science is today. And, you know, we talk a lot about diet, we talk a lot about exercise, we talk less about signal molecules, which is unfortunate because the turning point to control biologic aging occurred years ago. And most people just haven't heard about it. And, you know, the guys that won the Nobel Prize in 2012 for age reversal, you know, their work started, you know, back in the 1960s. You know, and you hear about some of the continued work that goes on at Harvard and MIT and other big institutions. And this information is already 15 years old. Yet people don't really follow that field very much. And it's a very big field, and I get it, it's a little complicated, but I think essentially think of the signal molecule category as a category that works at a cellular level on your genetics. And you've basically got hundreds of longevity genes, but three particular genes tend to be the most important. And, you know, I don't want to get too technical, but those specific three longevity gene pathways are referred to as your sirtuin pathways, your AMPK pathways, and your mTOR pathways. And there are certain signal molecules that if you have above and beyond what your normal diet can provide to you, you can nudge those longevity genes in your favor. And it's not just those three longevity genes. People have probably heard of the telomeres. So certain signal molecules will nudge those telomeres in your favor. And the last category is kind of your glucose metabolism or your metabolic pathways. So certain signal molecules definitely work on that cellular genetic level to kind of, you know, be that third leg of the triad of exercise, diet, and signal molecules. So I think, you know, when we talk about, if we talk specifically more about, you know, the exercise category, I want everybody to kind of keep in the back of their mind that they all overlap. Exercise, diet, and signal molecules overlap a lot more than they can imagine. And they're all very important. And I don't think anybody should kind of favor one over the other. I think you want to do all of it to get the best, the most benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of to the point of the signal molecule. So, and this is me trying to break it down. I am not a doctor, have a PhD or anything like that. But so are those essentially kind of, you know, going back to the genetic side of it, are those the signals that are telling your body sort of how to age in a sense? Like, is that a way to think about it, or am I thinking about that completely wrong?
No, I mean, so the current understanding as to why we age, which encompasses everything, is that every cell in your body, well, let me give you a little background first. Every cell in your body has the exact same DNA. You know, your brain cell has the same DNA as your skin cell. So why does one cell become a brain cell versus one cell become a skin cell? And that occurs because certain genes are turned on and off in a certain pattern to create the brain cell. But the brain cell still has all of the genes to create any cell it wants. So when the on-off pattern gets incorrect in your cells loses its identity. In other words, your brain cell may start to function as a skin cell. And that's essentially how you get cognitive decline. You know, when a skin cell starts to function as something other than a skin cell, you start to get wrinkles. And that's referred to as the information theory of aging. When the cells lose the correct on-off pattern of their genes, you start to age. That is essentially why we age. So there are certain signal molecules that are able to reverse us back to the correct on-off switch pattern. And those are the molecules for which those guys got the Nobel Prize back in 2012, and all of the guys at all the big institutions around the country today are working on. Some of these molecules get more publicity than others. Like you might have heard of, I find most people have heard of some of these molecules. One molecule is called NMN, or nicotinamide mononucleotide. And it nudges these cellular pathways to maintain your cellular identity so you don't start to age at a cellular level. And look, we're talking about cell aging, but we're talking about cells making up tissues and tissues making up organs. So we're talking about tissue aging. We're talking about organ aging. We're talking about your whole body aging at a cellular level. So that's the whole field of the signal molecule category. And it is a very important category. There's no question we can accelerate aging, or we can slow aging, or even reverse aspects of aging. And that's what that whole category of signal molecules are today.
That's interesting. I when it comes to aging, you know, how the different genes or cells or whatnot in your body, you know, not knowing what to do or changing, you know, from brain cell to skin cell or whatnot. I didn't really realize, honestly, that was sort of the reason for these different effects kind of as we get older. So, you know, are those different kind of signal molecules, is the reason that begins to happen as we do get older? Is that because they start to go dormant, or is that a mix of not the right something within you to kind of feed them and to continue those kind of connections?
Yeah. Well, you've probably heard, like, think back to your days in high school, you know, science class. You probably heard the word entropy, which means we go from a state of order to disorder. Everything in nature goes from order to disorder, and our genes are no different. You know, so if you think of your genes as having a bunch of toggle switches or on-off switches, as long as the right pattern is maintained, that cell continues to function the way it should. But once that toggle switch pattern is disrupted, the cell starts to lose its identity, and your cell and tissues and organs start to fail. And look, what's annoying is this information is probably 10 to 15 years old. Yet it just doesn't get into the public domain like the categories of diet and exercise do. But it is a very powerful category. And I think if people understand why they age, they'll understand why these signal molecules are important. They'll understand why diet affects this as well, and why exercise affects this. That's why I said, you really can't tease them all into completely separate categories, because exercise affects these toggle switches on the genes. Diet affects these toggle switches on the genes. They all overlap. And I think people need to see the big picture of it as well.
Yeah, no, that is very interesting and a great point as well. You know, that side of it sort of being hidden, I guess. I don't know if that's the right way, but not out there in the public as much for whatever reason. So you know, you keep talking about exercise and diet. So how does that feed into the signal molecules, as you mentioned?
So there are a lot of ways in which exercise, if we talk about exercise specifically as to how that alone affects our epigenome. So when we talk about the signal molecules, we're really talking about what's referred to as the epigenome. So, you know, your genome is your entire set of genetic instructions for your body. And your epigenome is how those sections of DNA are turned on and off. So there are certain things that also specifically affect the epigenome. Exercise is basically felt to have five different influences on your epigenome. One aspect of exercise is exercise enhances the body's capacity to repair damaged sections of DNA. It promotes expression of certain proteins in every cell in your body, and those proteins are involved in DNA repair mechanisms. So that's one way exercise affects these genetic pathways. The second way is exercise stimulates the production of reactive oxygen species, which basically counteract the oxidative stress or damage to the cells. So regular exercise activates these antioxidants defense pathways. The third way is exercise is felt to preserve the telomere length. And the telomeres are the tips of your DNA that we need to maintain a certain length for your cells to stay healthy and youthful, so to speak. Exercise also reduces systemic inflammation, which modulates gene expression. And exercise obviously has a big influence on glucose metabolism. So all of those ways are the way exercise impacts your longevity genes. I get it. It's a mouthful. You know, when we talk about signal molecules, we're talking about the science of it. And I think that's where, unfortunately, we lose the public. You know, I want to try and simplify it, but there is a certain amount of science that we need to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes sense. And basically what you're saying is exercise is important.
So, not only is it important on a cellular level, because we all know it's important for just the physical aspects of well-being, but I want everyone to understand that there's a cellular, genetic, epigenetic association with exercise as well. And that all of these will interact, just like diet affects your cellular genetic aging. People think, you know, it doesn't matter. I can have a hot dog. I can eat this. I can eat that. Soda's not going to be a problem for me. Alcohol is not going to be a problem. You know, a lot of times I've heard people say, you know, I have a grandmother who lived to be 98. But my response to them is, you know, your grandmother lived in a different time period, where there were less pollutants, there were less preservatives in food, the ozone layer was stronger, you know, we have greater damage to our DNA through UV radiation. Everything was changed. And most articles published today will tell you that 20% of your life is determined by the genes you got from your parents. 80% is going to be determined by how you influence your genes with your lifestyle choices throughout your life. So you can't get away with just saying, you know, my parents were healthy. It has probably very little with regards to your health going forward.
Yeah, that 80-20 rule is backwards in that case. Yeah. Or not backwards, yeah, exactly. But not beneficial.
Yeah. And people need to realize it. Like, if you watched the Super Bowl this year, they said one of the commercials towards the end said, you know, one out of two people will get cancer in America. It's like one out of two. I was ready to hit somebody. I was so annoyed to hear that statistic. But if you Google it, that's about what you'll find. You know, so where's all this cancer coming from? A lot of it is our environmental choices and our lifestyle choices. We are nudging our genes in the wrong way. And not only is it a cancer issue, it's an overall health issue. You know, it's cardiovascular disease, it's cognitive decline. You know, you watch the news and you see, you know, a football player died at age 62. Well, that's an awfully young age to die today. Yeah. But like, you know, they live in a world where they're eating certain ways to maintain their bulk. And, you know, they're living a lifestyle in a way where they are accelerating their aging process, not decelerating it, which is what we all want. And you can have a little bit of both, you know, as long as you understand what you're doing.
So in that example, so are you saying that there's almost a way there's that finding the healthy balance between exercise, diet, everything like that. But that if you go too far, too extreme on either of those, football player, you know, athletes like that, that have to maintain that muscle mass and feed their body to keep that as well, that can have a negative effect if it's too much one way.
Absolutely. That's the take home message. Look, not only do those guys eat a lot of protein for muscle mass, they are also way overweight. And that extra weight is a tremendous burden on every cell in their body, every tissue in their body, and every organ system in their body. And they are accelerating the wear and tear process of their entire body, their entire genetic system, and they will age at an accelerated rate. And it also opens up the door to just the discussion about diet. Like, there is this fascination with protein and muscle mass. We all know without question that the Mediterranean diet is the longevity diet. The low protein, high complex carbohydrate diet is the best diet you can have for your cells, for your epigenome, and for longevity, health span, and lifespan. There really shouldn't be any discussion about that. We know that. Yet people still feel like they have to take protein powders or they have to have high protein meals to build up muscle mass. You can get muscle mass from plant-based diets as well. You just have to know exactly what you're eating, you know, and I think the country is lacking in really understanding what their diet should be in terms of maximizing health span and lifespan. And again, that's why I say that triad of exercise, diet, and signal molecules, they all overlap. You know, here we went from signal molecules, you know, right to diet, but we're bouncing back to signal molecules because that's where we're talking about the epigenome. You know, when we get into the exercise category, you know, you'll still see the overlap of how do I eat right when I want to exercise and how does exercise affect, you know, my signal molecules and my epigenome again. Like, it's difficult to talk about one without talking about the other, but I get it. We need to be very specific and ultimately just have in the back of our minds the big overlap of all of these.
Yeah. So a couple of things came to mind there. I mean, as far as, I guess one question is sort of how do you kind of find out what that right balance is for you or your body without going to either of the extremes where it's either not enough or too much? Because obviously, you know, cellular letter, we're all different. So how do you find that where you're not, doing the wrong thing?
Yeah. Well, I think there are some basic things that we all need to agree on and participate in. And then you have to fine tune it a little bit to see how your body responds to it. So look, I think science is telling us there are basically several signal molecules that we should all introduce into our diet to maximize cellular efficiency, to maximize cellular identity, and to slow, you know, cellular aging. There are basic diets that we all need to participate in to again, do the same things. And there are certain exercises that we all need to understand and participate in as well. I think those are the three things that everybody needs to agree on. And there really isn't a lot of controversy about it. Almost all experts are going to agree on them, although they may want to just talk about their specific field individually. But, you know, if as an orthopedic doctor, as somebody in medicine who sees patients and sees these effects versus like a PhD who's in the lab, who's just studying the signal molecules, you know, he may not see the big picture, although a lot of them, I think, do. But I think the big picture is exercise, diet, and signal molecules.
Yeah, no, that is interesting, agreeing on that and then kind of and working out that way. So when it comes to diet and kind of all these different things, and I know kind of one thing is different supplements, and you mentioned, you know, people adding protein powder when they don't need it and vice versa and all this stuff. Do you think that is having, you know, just like everything, there's a balance to it, but is, you know, kind of those things where it's like, hey, yeah, take this in 30 days and you know, you'll lose 20 pounds or, you know, whatever that is. Like, do you think products like that are having a negative effect on the overall longevity because people are like looking for that quick hit of, you know, whatever they're looking for, but it's not really producing or going to produce those long results that they're looking for?
Yeah. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You know, protein powders, you know, high protein meals that people have because they want to build up muscle mass is having a negative effect on longevity. Now, if you're conscientiously choosing that, if you're going to say to yourself, I don't care. I don't want a long life. I don't want an overall healthy life. I want right now and then to be a bulkier, muscular, more muscular person, then that's what you'll choose. But I think if people understand that choice is going to affect their health span and their lifespan, they might think twice about it. And that's the whole point. I think everything should be measured in terms of how it affects your health span and your lifespan. And like, as an example, you know, the high protein meals absolutely are going to provide greater bulk and muscle mass. But when you have high protein meals, you're turning up one of your longevity genes called mTOR. And mTOR is the gene that senses when you have a lot of amino acids and proteins in your system. And when it senses that, it starts to take those amino acids and make more proteins and muscles. But the downside to that is it doesn't recycle the proteins that are floating around in your cell that are misfolded. And by not recycling those proteins accumulate and create essentially a gunk in your cell. They create traffic in your cell, and they lead to cellular inefficiency, and they lead to cellular aging. So if people understood that the high protein meal basically allows gunk to accumulate in their cell, and it decreases the ability of the cell to kind of cleanse itself, they might think twice about that. And they might strike a balance between the high protein meal or the low protein meal. And look, we all need proteins for life. I mean, I don't think anybody should misunderstand what I'm saying. You still need proteins. It's just there's the right amount of proteins, and you can get the right amount of proteins in what's referred to today as a low protein, high complex carbohydrate diet. I think that the misnomer is calling it low protein. I think what we should refer to it as the normal protein diet. Yeah. And these other people are on like this mega protein diet. And I think that's where people get confused. You know, you refer to the longevity diet as low protein, high complex carbohydrate. People is like, well, I don't want anything low. I want to be better than the next guy. So I want a high protein diet. It's like, so that's where some of the confusion occurs. But there's no question, low protein, high complex carbohydrate diet is associated with a long life and a healthy life. And it is associated with an athletic life. You know, this idea that you can't get enough protein with a plant-based diet is just wrong.
Yeah. And that's an interesting note when it comes to the branding or naming and marketing of, you know, low protein. I could see how that could, you know, your example, like, oh, I don't want anything that's too low, and yeah, go from there. So that's an idea for anybody listening to reframe that conversation. So I know kind of jumping back, to the signal molecules. So, and I know we just kind of talked about some different supplements and that kind of stuff, but you have something as well that you've kind of been researching as well. And I'm going to try to say it again, Ribosana, if I'm saying that right. What is, yeah, what kind of is that, and how is that different or unique, I guess, to, you know, taking a multivitamin, or, you know, I'm just using kind of examples like that, but like, what, I guess, with your research that you found through it?
Yeah. So I think, you know, people should think of the supplement field as having three categories, vitamins like vitamin D or B12, minerals like zinc or magnesium, And then the third category are these signal molecules, and they are organic molecules. They are found in nature. And these molecules actually work at the cellular level to help control this genetic on-off pattern that we want. And so, and again, this isn't my, you know, basic research. I didn't do this in the lab, but, you know, I've pretty much read it, almost everything that's ever been published in this category. And there are five molecules that are identified that appear to have significant benefits to our longevity gene pathways, as well as the telomere length and the metabolic pathways. And there may be other molecules that are identified down the road that may be even better. But the five molecules that I like to talk about are the ones that have the greatest long-term track record for efficacy and safety. And they have, some of them have been shown to extend the lifespan of every organism ever tested through these genetic pathways. So I like to think of the signal molecule as a third category in this supplement category. You know, vitamins you need, you know, and I think you get most of your vitamins certainly through a balanced meal or a diet, and you get most of your minerals and vitamins that way. I think most people in America are vitamin D deficient, and most people are probably B12 deficient, and I think those are the two vitamins that we all need to take. The minerals, I mean, like I know from my diet, I don't feel like I have to take any minerals. I think I get the right amount of minerals in my diet. I think it's very rare that people are vitamin deficient today or a mineral deficient today, but B12 and vitamin D are probably the two that we are deficient. There was an orthopedic article published recently that looked at even in athletes, most athletes are vitamin D deficient. And I had my vitamin D level tested a while ago, and sure enough, I was vitamin D deficient. So I've been supplementing with vitamin D, you know, for a long time. But those are the three categories: vitamins, minerals, and signal molecules.
Interesting. So when it comes to the deficiency of B and D, why do you think that is? Why do you think that it's kind of changed?
Well, with vitamin D, you know, historically we used to say you had to be in the sun 15 minutes a day with a t-shirt and shorts in order for your body to make vitamin D. Most of us are wearing sunscreens today. Most of us have long sleeves and pants on most of the time. You know, depending on where you live, your body's just not exposed to the sun. So that's largely why we're all vitamin D deficient. And interestingly, if you do blood tests and you start exposing yourself to the sun, and then you check your blood test, you really don't raise your vitamin D level very much anymore. So there are probably multiple reasons why we're vitamin D deficient. Some of it may be absorption, some of it is metabolism. But the bottom line is we are vitamin D deficient, and we probably should replace it because you need your vitamin D for your brain, for your immune system. The other mistake people make is, you know, they take vitamin D with a glass of water or with coffee. You know, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. It's just not going to be absorbed unless you take it with yogurt or olive oil or something like that. Even if you look at vitamin D bottles when you buy them today, some of them are either in seed oils, which you don't want, or some of them are just in a powder form. And again, if you're not taking it with an oil or a fatty substance, you're not going to absorb it. So, you know, we're largely vitamin D deficient. And the same thing is with B12. You know, you probably, if you check your B12 levels, you could be on the low side. And as we get older, we tend to absorb less B12. So, you know, as you get into your 50s, you're either going to test your B12 level or you're going to just start supplementing with it.
That's interesting. Especially,
but it's interesting to think that the athletes, you know, athletes feel like they're not vitamin D deficient. Interestingly, when you look at this orthopedic article, I think it was 90% of athletes are vitamin D deficient.
Wow.
And, you know, vitamin D is required for calcium metabolism. You know, and the last thing an athlete wants is to get a stress fracture. So a lot of professional athletes today are aware of this. You know, they've got such great dietitians, they've got great trainers, and they test it and they put them on these supplements.
Yeah.
But the general public, you know, may not.
Well, and that's interesting too. Like even, you know, as you mentioned, you know, how to take the different supplements when you're doing that. I never knew that if I was taking a vitamin D pill, that it'd be good to eat it with some yogurt or take it with some yogurt or something like that to help absorb it. So that's super interesting.
And, you know, even the signal molecules that, you know, we're talking about, they are almost all fat soluble. If you take them, you do need to take them with a fatty substance, yogurt, olive oil, or something like that. And look, I'll just get it out there. The five signal molecules that I like to refer to are, one is NMN, nicotinamide mononucleotide, and that is not fat soluble. That one you could take with water, but all of the other ones are. And the other ones are astragalus, works on your telomeres, berberine, works on your glucose metabolism, resveratrol, which people probably have heard of. That's the one that's in red wine that's associated with longevity in the French population. And then berberine, astragalus, resveratrol. Oh, quercetin. Quercetin is the fifth one. So those are the five signal molecules that I think shouldn't be introduced in ultimately everybody's diet today. And that's what we tried to do with Revasana. We tried to create a comprehensive signal molecule supplement that was backed by, you know, science for the dosage, was convenient to take. I think the hard part, though, is educating people as to why you should take them. And that's the science end of it. But I think the more we talk about it, the more people will actually jump on that bandwagon. I have put on YouTube a bunch of videos with slideshows that kind of explain exactly what the cellular mechanisms are.
Yeah. And I think as you mentioned, sort of that educational aspect of it, when you start looking at those different molecules and stuff, is that, it's not something you hear about. You hear about exercise and diet, but going deeper, at least from like a general public standpoint, like, what? I need to take this. So, I think that makes sense, trying to, you know, get it more out there. And explain the science behind it. Cause, you know, as this conversation has kind of gone on, everything you've explained has made sense.
Yeah. And look, I think everybody likes talking about diet and the exercise category. And I like talking about it as well, but the signal molecule category is very important. And I think people need to focus on all three. But look, I suspect your listeners probably also like talking about the value of strength training, the VO2 max, numbers that people talk about. You know, those are equally important categories. And, that's why I say all of these categories overlap and all of them are valuable if you really want to focus on the health span, lifespan category.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of building onto that. And so before I go to our final question I have for you, is there anything else that we might not have covered or in depth that you wanted to mention before?
I feel like I didn't get a chance to talk about strength training and aerobic conditioning and balance function and stretching.
Well, let's get into it.
But I think in that exercise, okay, yeah. Because I think what people need to realize is that they experience a gradual decline in muscle mass as they get older. And, you know, I think it starts as early as age 30, you know, where you lose about 3 to 8% of muscle mass per decade. And that accelerates, that loss accelerates after age 60. And, you know, we're talking about just muscle mass or bulk. And then muscle strength also decreases at about 1% to 2% per year over age 50. So, you know, maintaining your strength with strength training is incredibly important. Like, if you know where you want to be at age 80 and you know how much you're going to decline, you should know where you have to be at age 30, 40, or 50, or 60. If you know how much you want to be able to lift or how far you want to be able to walk, you need to know where you have to be now. That's where the science is today. And the same thing goes with aerobic conditioning. You know, you probably have heard of your VO2 max, or the maximum rate you can use oxygen. And, you know, that's what determines whether you can run 10 miles an hour at age 50, or whether you can, you know, jog at age 35. You know, you need to know what your VO2 max is now, because your VO2 max, your oxygen consumption, will decline at about 10 to 15% per decade. So if you can't do certain things now, the likelihood that you're going to be able to continue functioning the way you are in a decade drops off dramatically. So strength training is important. Aerobic conditioning is important. And then the other two categories, I think, in exercise are balance function. You know, if you watch like a golf training video today, they're always standing on one foot trying to simulate the golf swing. I think it's just a great example for people to realize how advanced we are today and how important balance function is, and how you can work on that the same way you work on strength training. And then the fourth category of exercise I think that's important is the stretching, you know, maintaining your range of motion. And as an orthopedic doctor, I understand that most of the nutrients get into your cartilage by milking the nutrients into your cartilage. And if you aren't putting your joints through a full range of motion, you're not milking the nutrients into your cartilage around the periphery. And that's where you start to get arthritis and degeneration. So all of these categories in exercise are incredibly important: strength training, aerobic conditioning, balance function, and stretching. You know, and that's why, like, this triad of exercise, diet, and signal molecules is really important for people who really want to understand and benefit from the lifespan, health span category today.
Yeah. And that's interesting. Kind of, you know, how the muscle decline and everything, you know, throughout the years, you know, at that certain point, how you almost have to I guess I never really thought of it in that sense of I need to prepare now for that, of, you know, what I'm going to be doing when I'm 70 or 80, kind of in that depth, I should say. I've never thought of it, which is interesting. To think about.
And that's why we're talking about it. We want to get this information out now. People want to know when they're in their 30s, you know, in 40s, not when you're in your 50s and 60s or 70s or 80s. Now, interestingly, at any age, this stuff actually will show benefit. Even the signal molecules taken at any age, you can start to see, you know, reversal of certain aspects of aging. But we want to get this information out there now, you know, in the diet category, which we obviously won't be able to get into today. But you know, the diet category is incredibly important because it is nudging our cellular mechanisms in the wrong direction. And as we get older and we are, you know, living a more successful part of our life, you know, we've worked in the past, we go out to eat more, we drink more, we become more sedentary, we are doing all the wrong things. We are accelerating the aging process by doing all those things. We need to maintain a good diet. We need to maintain good strength training and exercising. And I think that's why we talk about this. And as a doctor, this is more science than medicine, which bothers me. You don't go to your doctor and hear about this, which you should. You know, this is the reason why we see so much disease out there today, and somehow we accept it. You know, America, we've got really good at basically waiting for a disease to occur, and then we catch up with treatment. You know, somehow things are going in the wrong direction. We need to just wait, you know, stop waiting for the disease to occur. We need to stop the disease from occurring. And hopefully we won't need the treatment. And I think that's, you know, my goal by participating in this is to get the message out there that, you know, this has to become more medicine than science. You know, this information is lost in the PhD literature, and we need to give it the platform it needs through the medical profession. And I think, you know, that's why, you know, I'm very excited about this area. And I'm excited about what you do, because this is the best media, I think, to get the information out there. This, in combination with lectures and slideshows and YouTube videos, where people can listen to it and watch it at their own, you know, rate, and hopefully absorb it all.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And you know, to your point, I mean, at a very base level, you know, kind of understanding, hey, you know, working out is good, or you know, a diet is good. Signal molecules, that was kind of a new one for me. But understanding the reason, like why, and like explaining the reason behind that, and how that looks, you know, 50 years from now, or however long from now, you know, whatever you're hoping to live until, is kind of an interesting perspective that like you said as well, you know, it's not being communicated. So the general public that are kind of outside of that, they're not really thinking about those different aspects in that way, and kind of connecting all the dots for a long-term projection, more of a, you know, short-term window. So,
yeah. Yeah. I read somewhere that less than 8% of the country really follows this field. It's an incredibly small number. And just think about how much good we could do to the public if they start to understand this to a greater degree. Because I think once you understand it, it becomes very compelling. It's not compelling if you don't understand it. And I think through these types of, you know, podcasts and lectures, you know, slowly people will understand it. And I think once they do, it changes their lifestyle.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's the goal.
No, I love it. And I definitely appreciate you sharing that. So one of the questions that I always, you know, like to ask our guests is kind of one piece of advice for our listeners. Obviously, you know, we've talked about these three different categories. And I'm going to take this one a little, usually I ask it from a general perspective, but I'm going to be specific from my perspective, which hopefully our audience should relate to as well. So, the Tuesday before this recording, I just turned 32. I have a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old, young family. At this point in my life, kind of this age, what is the best thing that I could do to kind of start, you know, obviously kind of this conversation opened up some things that I'd never really thought about, you know, what is the best place to start? Because at the same time, all that can be kind of seem overwhelming all at once. So like to get started, get in the right direction where you're thinking long-term and figuring out what your body needs, what it doesn't need, those kind of things. What is the simplest place to start?
Yeah, I think, look, we don't know what a generation of people look like that do all the right things. I mean, it could be a very, very different landscape when people grow up with the right diet, with the right exercise, and the right signal molecules. I think the take-home message for you and the public and everybody listening is that at any age, you can benefit. And every day makes a difference. Some of the things that we do are probably a one-way street. Some of the things we can do can reverse certain aspects, but not all of it. Not all of it can be reversed. But I think for you, your children, and the listeners, you know, exercise is incredibly important throughout your life. There are not just with muscle mass, but metabolic processes. Signal molecules are very important. And probably when you start to age is when you start to introduce the signal molecules. And we all start to age in our late 20s. And I think diet is incredibly important. Like your children probably need to understand what they're doing to themselves with sugar or some of the stuff that's in their diet, like with French fries or fried foods. Some of those things are one-way streets. And I'll just give you a little, you know, insight with regards to diet. So right now, you know, most of the fried foods are fried with seed oils. And the seed oils are really high in omega-6 fatty acids. you hear a lot about omega-3 fatty acids. And 100 years ago, you know, our ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids was about 1 to 1. Today, it's about 15 to 1. Wow. And your fatty acids make up your cell membranes. We have changed every cell membrane in our body. And we wonder why all these health issues are coming up. There's no question that if the cell membrane changes, what gets in your cell and what gets out of your cell changes. And we are disrupting our entire metabolic system in our body. So the fried foods, people need to really start to walk away from them. We can't just see these commercials and associate fried foods or a bucket of fried chicken with like a barbecue or some type of, you know, American happiness. Fried foods are bad for us. We need to get rid of them. And kids need to understand this at a young age. The other thing kids need to know is sugar is bad for us. It's changing our genetic makeup. We are all becoming insulin resistant. I would bet if you check your hemoglobin A1C levels, you're probably going to see you're becoming close to a pre-diabetic. So we didn't realize this 100 years ago when sugar first entered into our diets. You know, it was like the late 1800s, early 1900s. You know, it was just kind of a novelty to have sugar and sweets. But we know now. We also didn't know that the seed oils were bad for us and they somehow infiltrated into our diets. But we know now. So we need to reverse that. And we need to let, you know, your generation, the younger generation, and even my generation know that all of these things matter. Exercise matters, diet matters, and signal molecules matter. That's my take-home message for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Kind of being more thoughtful about what you're putting in and kind of looking at it from that perspective. So I think that's excellent. So, to that point, where can people find you online or kind of learn more about this if they'd like?
So the website called revisana.com has a resource section where there are a number of articles that I wrote that I think will explain what the signal molecules do. I also have linked to that website a couple of videos that talk about the diet component, the seed oils, and things like that. And I'll continue to post, you know, I think these YouTube videos, which I think people have told me they enjoy watching regarding exercise, diet, and the signal molecules. And I think it's a great way for people to kind of be able to watch it multiple times, because I understand the science can be a little confusing and intimidating, but I think it's presented in a way where I think the information will sink into their cognitive, you know, brain, and they'll hopefully, you know, change the way they live. And I think that's the goal.
Absolutely. And so everyone definitely make sure you check out those other resources. Kind of, as you can tell, I feel like this conversation could have gone on for a long, long time because it's kind of so in depth and honestly so interesting to myself. So those different resources that you offer to kind of go in deeper, definitely make sure you all check them out. For that. But I appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, obviously your passion for kind of helping everybody live a longer life, a healthier life, and how those three categories interact. So I appreciate that. And I wish you the best of luck as you continue to help people understand that.
Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Thanks for listening. And hey, if you made it this far and like what you've heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and let your friends know about Life in Motion. Until next time.